So my guest today joins me from Costa Rica, my first guest coming from that area of the world. It's a fantastic guy who likes to talk about leadership. He's got an author. He's an author. He's got some books out at the moment. One particularly we're going to talk about today, which is Rebel Leadership. It's the fantastic Larry Robertson. Larry, I know your day has just started, but how's your week been so far? Let's open it up that way.
Oh my gosh. Wow. It's such an interesting question in Costa Rica, which I don't live here full time, but we're here for a 5 month period. And so it always depends on where you are, what the answer to that is. It's never bad in Costa Rica. It's just adventurous. So our week's been good, but we've just moved from the Caribbean to the center of the country, and it's full of change every time we move.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for being my first guest located up there at the current moment of time. That's always a good one. So tell us about Larry. Tell us about who you are. I always do this to my guests. Rather than me give a bio, live your bio. Who are you, Larry?
I appreciate that. That's a different kind of question, and I'll give you a different kind of answer too. It's, as I hear you say it, it's kind of a, well, who is Larry question. And at least for me, that's something that I'm always working on. So I think that says a lot about me, is that at the high level, I'm a deeply curious person, and I really love to learn, but I love to take what I learn and to see what I can do with it. And my favorite thing in that regard is to take what I learn and to share it and see what I can do to help others do with it, do what they're capable of, do what they dream of. So that high level gives you the context for the areas that I focus on: creativity, entrepreneurship, and leadership. All of those things should involve deep curiosity. And I work in that space as a consultant and as an advisor. That's my primary business. But I also do a lot of research because I meet a lot of different people, see a lot of different projects. And that research not only goes into my consulting work, but it goes into my writing. I've written several books, and I write regular columns. So that's a good high level of who I am.
And you mentioned there some traits that I know we've kind of communicated via email before we set this up today. And three of your traits, if we so expertise areas, if I can say, is an intersection, like you said, creativity, leadership, and entrepreneurial thought.
Yes.
Why are these traits so important to you in particular?
Well, it's interesting because they are important to me, but I'm going to argue that they're important to everyone. And the reason I say that is that even though we think differently about those traits or topics, and I'm going to just repeat them for your audience: creativity, the entrepreneurial thinking or the entrepreneurial mindset, and leadership. Sometimes we treat those as though they belong to some select group of people, but not the rest of us. And nothing could be further from the truth. They are innately human traits. It's just that many of us don't practice using them, and therefore we think of them as something other people have and distance from us. So I think they're the most important because they really dig at that very human level underneath us, which is we all want to advance forward, whatever that means. It doesn't mean climbing some corporate ladder or something like that, but to advance forward in some way with a problem we have, with an idea we have, with a curiosity we have. And these are the traits that help take us there. And most importantly, even people who think about creativity and entrepreneurial thinking and leadership often think about them as separate, but really they need one another. And so that's another reason why I think of these as such critical traits, because you can be very creative and have an idea, but if you never think of the value to others, here's the entrepreneurship part coming in, then it really doesn't mean a whole lot. It means something to you, but it doesn't mean something to humanity or what your impact can be on the world. And if you really want it to have impact, you need to bring others to that idea, allow them to build on it, allow them to take control. That's really leadership. That's good leadership. That's not traditionally defined leadership, but it's impactful leadership. So that's how those things come together for me.
And do you think we kind of do ourselves a disservice, or people do themselves a disservice about what kind of capabilities they've got in that? So, we are quite creative people. We've from way back when to now, look at the innovation that has been in the world. We leadership within us is a natural thing within us. Again, things that are biologically years and years in the making. But do you think we do ourselves a disservice in the current era of thinking that maybe we're not good enough, or we're not innovative enough, or we're not good leaders? Do we do ourselves that disservice?
Yeah, it's a great question, Rich. And so, and I'm glad you specified it to this era, because you could have asked it as, in general, do we do ourselves a disservice? And I would have said, in any time, absolutely. I mean, when you don't use something that is part of your standard factory issued components, right? That's how we're born. As you made reference to, this has been built up over millennia. It's not something new. So when you're not using a fundamental part of you, yeah, that's a disservice. But especially now, in what I would call deeply uncertain times, and not just the last, you know, 2.5, almost 3 years of this pandemic, which are deeply uncertain, but that's just an example of the last 20 years, which have become increasingly more uncertain, more, you know, there's a term out there that people use sometimes, an acronym, VUCA, more volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And I think of that as our new abnormal. So rather than searching, as we always do, for, oh, we have a problem, let's make our way out of that, let's create a new status quo, the new abnormal is there really isn't a status quo. Things are always in motion. Adaptability is the coin of the realm. We've got to be able to adapt. So here we are back again at creativity, entrepreneurship, and leadership, those things that allow us to adapt over time. And I'll throw this into, you know, we started with who is Larry, or tell us about Larry. That's very individual. But what really makes those skills powerful, especially in uncertain times where you have to move a little more rapidly, you have to be a little more fluid and flexible, is when we use them together, which means that everybody has to embrace them in some way. That's why I think they're so powerful, because if we try to do things the way we've always done them in this era, we're in trouble.
Yeah, and that's a very key point, isn't it? You know, people that fear the change and things are normally the people that get left behind, people that maybe embrace change, need to support the people that do fear the change, but we need to drive forward. Absolutely. You talked about uncertain times. So that brings us perfectly. So obviously you've authored three books. Your current one we're here to talk about a bit today is about the rebel leadership, so how to thrive in uncertain times. Now, you described that as looking at universal patterns across thriving in uncertain times. And what I liked when you sent me your email was you described it as peeling back the orange. Well, you're on the Inside the Orange podcast. It's all about peeling oranges. Tell us, elaborate on the book. Tell us about that. And why is it so good for Inside the Orange listeners?
Sure. No, so we talked a little bit about the first part, which is really the subtitle, how to thrive in uncertain times. So we've described that. This rebel leadership part is a bit different, but let me touch on your patterns reference. So all of my books really look at patterns. And what do I mean by a pattern in entrepreneurship or leadership or creativity? I mean that it's kind of application agnostic. So I'm looking at leadership, or I'm looking at creativity everywhere that it occurs. And what I'm looking for, what are the common elements or the common patterns across all those different applications, so that we don't make the mistake, like with creativity, of saying, oh, well, you know, that's only in the arts. People in the arts are the only creative people, which a lot of people still believe that to be true. No, I'm looking for the patterns that are there no matter what you do. Why am I looking for those patterns? Because they dig down to what's most fundamental. I mean, the things that you're going to see everywhere aren't the things that are associated with a particular job or a particular business model or even a particular form of value. They're common to all of those, and we build something very specific on top of them. But these are the fundamental things. Those are the things inside the orange, right? And I focus on those things because they are also the most transferable. Meaning I can learn something from you, you can learn something from me, and I may not employ it in exactly the same way, but it's the power source, as I like to say, to what I can create on my own. So those common patterns are the most fundamental things. And I think there was an additional part to your question related to leadership, but that's related to the patterns and why I focus on those things in my book. Sorry for forgetting the last part if I did.
No, it's fine. As I say, you know, and I enjoy it. And what makes you such a perfect guest for the podcast is Inside the Orange was built on the fact that we go to work, we perform in a role, but people, we don't see past the inner bit. You know, we've all got things inside us that can help other people or create and grow. And again, I think this podcast was built in 2020 in the midst of the pandemic, an uncertain time. So right. It's nice to be living something that you're describing, as I say, in your book. And as I say, it's really interesting. You've also talked about seeing leaders. So a myth or a business myth over the years, or something that probably was very kind of apt in the 80s, was the leader as a hero. You know, this Bruce Willis-esque fear, you know, saving a company all on his own with nothing around him. This leadership as a hero. You want to dispel that, or you want to move that in the current time where that isn't necessarily the case. Is that fair?
Yes. So, and it's interesting because then you just reminded me as well of the other part of your question related to the book. The book is not just looking at these uncertain times. It's looking at those leaders and organizations in the past 20 years who are actually thriving in these times. So it's looking for the patterns to say, why? Why are they able to thrive as the rest of us kind of feel the water rising and we're swimming just to keep our head above it and to breathe? So part of the difference, a key part of the difference in leaders that are thriving is that they recognize that this myth of leader equals leadership, like one person is the sum total of all the ideas, all the answers, all the problem solving. I have all the information to give the rest of you direction. That's a mythology that you're right. I mean, was amplified in periods like the 80s, but has really been around, we could probably go further back, but at least since the industrial age, where we built kind of this idea, whether it was in business or it was in how we educate people, of there's a top and then it pyramids down. And this person or people at the top tell the rest of us what direction to go, what to think. Those people at the top also say, you know, I really want you to be innovative, but don't mess up the system, which is a way of saying, I want you to be innovative, but I don't want you to do the things that are required in innovation. So we have a whole culture internationally that has built around this idea of this heroic figure. I mean, think about any political campaign in any country. What's the platform that any candidate comes in with? I know the problems and I can fix them. I mean, we had it to the extreme in the US over the last administration of, I don't need anybody else. I know everything I need to know and I can fix it. And that's not to make a comment on that person, but to make a comment on that heroic image of a leader who can do it all. It's never been true, but in uncertain times, it can't possibly be true. So if we continue to approach leadership that way, rather than thinking about what it really is, leadership is cultural, right? If it's there as part of every human being, then we all need to share in it some way. We need to pass the baton regularly, and with it, the power and the ideas and things like that. This isn't about making a new CEO every other week and we fill out a chart and say, it's Jane's turn, it's Timmy's turn, it's whatever. No, it's saying that everybody wants to step up and lead in their own way, and we need to create the space to do that. And when we create solutions, we need to create them together. And I'm not really trying to paint a, you know, wonderful world and mom and apple pie and all that. It's just reality. Humans think and solve together, and they rely on one another to innovate, and including innovate themselves out of problems. That's what leadership is and has to be, rather than this one figure equals the totality of leadership.
Fantastic answer to that question. So it draws me into two more questions. So the first one, going back to a little bit of the disservice, have we got to a point now where we almost think, or businesses think, we need our leader? You know, we've watched people who have, as you say, the heroic figures, the Steve Jobs, you know, of the past. What happens when we haven't got these guys in charge? You know, have we allowed that it's actually stifled the innovation in some companies? And the second question, again, I'll reiterate if it does, sure, as put the points. Have we got the opportunity with a new generation where we are seeing more vulnerability in leadership, where we aren't seeing that heroic leader? There is more talk, there is more innovation. Have we got a new generation that might emerge kind of without those kind of biases on them that will help develop these businesses?
Yeah. So I would say yes to all of those. And then I would add a word and say, there's the opportunity for all of that to be a yes. And I'll tell you, you know, a couple of interesting vignettes here, right? So this, a good leader is somebody who creates an environment where everyone can lead. It's that simple. So do we need these individual leaders to get us started, to move in that direction, to allow these things to become cultural? Absolutely. In fact, if we don't have such leaders, it's really hard for a group to kind of put that together. And what does a group do first when they really want to accomplish something? They designate a leader. So it's the type of leader that we really want. The other vignette is kind of interesting, though. There was some research that was done about this time last year when we were, I know this is hard to remember, but when we were coming out of the first wave, it was the first true lull in the pandemic, such that people were saying, well, how are we going to return to work? And there was some research done around this. McKinsey did and company did some really good research where they surveyed about 500 senior leaders and they surveyed about 5,000 employees. And what they found was that these leaders, even though privately they knew that they couldn't lead alone, publicly they had what McKinsey called a finish line mentality. I know the new solution. This is the path we're going to go on. And you can guarantee yourselves that it is going to stay in place for 3 to 5 years. 75% of leaders were still saying that, even in this environment. Here's the interesting thing. 75% of those 5,000 employees didn't believe it. They believed the opposite. They believed that things were going to continue to stay fluid, that there needed to be adaptability, that we all needed to set the goals, including these mass exoduses of employees, especially in the United States, which continues now. Millions each month are choosing to leave their jobs. So it really goes to that interesting point of yours. What does this next generation hold? I think right now they hold truth. Okay, they're willing to accept that we live in this uncertain world, and they want to make something within that rather than trying to turn it to a certain world. And yet, leaders have been so well trained to provide certainty to their employees that they're a little slow in embracing this idea of this new direction. So I think the potential is there, and I see it happening in a lot of places. But you know, old myths are there for a reason. They're hard to get rid of. We get used to them. We not only enjoy them sometimes, but we embed them in who we are. And it's going to take a little work to crack those.
And again, lovely answers to the point there. And again, it's such a, if it's not unfair to say, your work talks about uncertain times, but in all uncertain times, there is the opportunity, as you say, to embrace the next bit, isn't it? If we go into it kind of looking up as what's next rather than fearful of, very, very interesting point, you look at something to say what's next in a fearful way, you're not going to go anywhere. But if you say what's next in a way of what can we do, what can we take as the opportunities? So out of the uncertain times, normally when we've looked back at wars and we had the Roaring Twenties and we've had things in the past, we've had good following uncertain times. Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely true. I mean, we can, so you're talking eras and that's absolutely true. But even in little ways, new innovations, new processes, new ways of doing things. Here's a problem that we have as humans. When we get something good, we tend to build around it. We like doing things this way. So we're going to build everything to orient towards doing things this way. Efficiency, less diversity, less variety. Why? Because we have this perception that change, diversity, even including who leads and when, is a bad thing, that it'll cause disruption. And here's the honest answer. Yep, it's going to cause disruption, but not at the level that we think. If you look at those organizations that, let's just continue with that theme, are embracing diversity in terms of who they hire and where those people come from and what their ideas are, but also taking that into diversity and how they lead. Okay, let's incorporate those different perspectives. Let's see what each tells us. There's this fear that we're stepping off a cliff if we embrace that as a leader, it'll lead to disorder. And yet at the same time, in reality, it's more of a curb, just making that little step. So there is an adjustment, there is some uncertainty, but it's interesting to look at the research to see how fast these organizations that embrace diversity of thought and diversity of leadership move into the innovation stage rather than the, oh my gosh, what is this? This might be uncertainty forever. The evidence shows that that's not the case. And I think the reason it shows that is because it is deeply our human nature to need that diversity. So we're actually being pulled towards something we think we fear, And we're building up our fears sometimes too much to allow us to be pulled towards that thing we need.
How do we get good rebels? So obviously the word rebel does have that kind of connotation of rogue, of going off and doing the wrong thing. How do we make sure that rebel leaders are the right rebel leaders?
Gosh, yeah, I have to say, I've done a lot of podcast interviews and nobody's quite asked me that question. And that is the most important question. So in a way, the title of this book is there to intrigue you, really, rebel leadership, because we have impressions, not just of rebels, but of leaders. And really this book is about the best of what it means to rebel, which is really to be open to new ideas and to be willing to go a different direction, and the best of what it means to lead, which is to create an environment where everybody can lead. So being rebellious in this sense is actually about leaning towards what works. It is not about dice rolling. It is not about disruption for the sake of disruption. The rebellious thing is to be willing to move away from what became a pattern in the last century and still is largely in the first 20 years of this one, and towards the things that are actually working. So if you do that, you end up getting the best kind of rebels.
That's, again, thank you for asking that. I appreciate you not been asked that before. So I'll take on a win to say I've got a different question.
Yeah, total win.
Very good. Good.
For me too.
So tell us about your other work. So this is your third book. So are the other books related to this or are they completely different? Or what other books you got out there?
Good question. They are related in the sense that the first book was focused on entrepreneurship and stepping back and seeing those larger patterns. The second did the same with creativity. And this third most recent book does that with leadership. So in that way, they're similar. They weren't intentionally tied to one another, but really, you know, deep within my thoughts, they probably are.
Okay. Now, the most important bit is obviously people are listening today. What we've done and what we like to do on the podcast is we intrigue people's listening and go, hang on, this guy, I want to know a bit more about Larry's work. So this is your opportunity. How can people find you and where can they find your work?
Yeah, so the best place to go for all of that is my primary website. It's my initials, LR, and then the word speaks, LRSpeaks.com. And there you'll find descriptions of everything I do and also how it comes together. So you'll see samples of my columns that are easy to access, brief descriptions of the books, other interviews that I've done and descriptions of what I do from a consulting standpoint. I think it's really important to note that we've talked about the bigger picture, the concept, the ideas of this largely today. I'm really focused on what works in actual practice. And so when you go to that website, if you're listening and you do go to that website, what you'll find are these practical applications. Okay, what do I do with that information? How do I get started? Where do I begin? I'd suggest that my columns are one of the best places to do that because they're all short and they're very action oriented.
Okay, and just on the back, so obviously we've just come out, as you said, of the most uncertain time in probably recent history. So if we were to find ourselves back in something again in the next couple of years or in the next 6 months, what is your advice to people to take away today on dealing with the uncertain times?
So my advice would be the way that I defined and described what a really good leader is and a rebel, a really good rebel. And that is somebody who's open. And so, you know, that openness gets talked about some of the time, but we tend to talk about it as in this case, I better be open because I have this problem and I'm not able to overcome it. No, I'm talking about openness in the larger sense, remaining open. And really, that is the best, and I might almost go to the extreme of arguing the only way to deal with ongoing uncertainty, this new abnormal, as I describe it, is to remain open. And open isn't just to, oh my God, here's the next challenge and the next, you know, hardship. No, it's openness to opportunity. It's openness to tweaking our current ways of doing things and our ideas before we let it get to a point where we need to make a massive change. So that's what I'd really emphasize. And by the way, I have a number of articles that talk about openness and specifically what you can do to remain open, some key questions you can ask, some things you can do.
And again, we will make sure they're available and links to your website is available on the show notes and description. So people, if you want to go and have a look at Larry's work, please, by all means, they will be featured on the show notes and description. Larry, I just want to say thank you so much for coming and having this chat. I want to know again if we are available to have another one in the near future or in the future, and we can talk about maybe the next book or maybe the current uncertain time or maybe the next level of leadership or entrepreneurial thought. Would that be okay for you to come back again?
I would absolutely love it. In fact, you know, one of the things we kind of got to here at the end was questions. And it might be fun to explore how questions feed into everything we talked about and actually make it actionable. But either way, I just want to take a second to thank you for not only having me on as a guest, but for having this show. There are very, very, very few podcasts, as you know, that actually dig in and try to see something deeper, as you would say, inside the orange, but also something that I think is more relatable. So I appreciate the opportunity to contribute.
No worries. Larry, thank you so much for your time. And guys, I urge you to go and have a look at Larry's work. Fantastic stuff. And his books. So to have a look. But Larry, thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your day.
My pleasure, and the same to you.